Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. I'm in my car in San Diego, about to go to Petco Park. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. I just got back from Mexico City. Don't know if you knew that, Ryan. What a weekend. Padres at home. Well, wait. They were at home. They were the home team the last 2 days in Mexico City. It was awesome. That's where we'll start. But I do want to mention, we will also preview the series against the Reds coming up. Ryan, what did you think visually on TV?
I thought it was great. I mean, really, especially to me, it was sort of a tale of two games. I thought Saturday was both ridiculous but fun. High scoring game. Padres in their City Connect, in their very polarizing City Connect uniforms. Giants wearing the Gigantes. I thought it was fun. Sunday, then you go into Sunday thinking, well, it's going to be a 16-14 game. It's really not. It more resembled baseball, like what we've seen at Petco Park, let's say. And whether that's a problem for the Padres offense or not, we will discuss, I'm sure, later in the show. I thought really good. If you're the San Diego Padres, I would trade a home series for that every couple of years, because I think it's good for baseball, good for the franchise.
Absolutely. I'm telling you, I don't know for sure. Look, the Dodgers had the very vast head start of Fernando Valenzuela. All right. Sure. And did a wonderful job with that. And it was also very organic. But the Padres have done a really good job. The Padres have played in Mexico more than any team. I will say that it was overwhelmingly, as much as 80% Padres fans and people that were rooting for the Padres. There were a lot of people from San Diego, from Tijuana, from Baja California, but also people from Mexico City that are Padres fans or became Padres fans. Their uniforms, if you're so old and you can't get it behind it, just kidding.
I'm on board. I'm a fan.
Now, I'm talking about others, but, you know, yeah. But I'll tell you this. They play well in Mexico, those colors. So I think that they have just done a great job. They have a couple famous people like Rey Mysterio. Brandon Moreno, the flyweight champion of the world, the UFC, that are locals, Tijuana and Chula Vista, you know, bring a little bit of that cachet. It was I think the Padres played well, and I mean that figuratively. But I also thought they also played well in Mexico.
Right. Kevin, was this your first trip to Mexico City? And what did you make of the environment and the atmosphere?
The atmosphere was fantastic. I love me. I was very disappointed that they went to the seventh inning stretch in English on Sunday. Love me some, Spanish. Take me out to the ball game. I thought that was awesome. The Mexican national anthem is the best in the world, I think.
It's fantastic.
And the fans were just so into it. Like I said, 75-80% Padres fans. The people at the ballpark were great. It was a great ballpark. It was a fine AAA ballpark that MLB turned into MLB quality standards. The city is a beautiful city. It's huge. Has a lot of traffic. The food is good. The Padres were treated well. I thought it was fantastic.
Excellent. Kevin, what's the commute like back to San Diego from Mexico City? My guess is you had an early morning today.
I did have an early morning. Now, I do think that there is some directs. I know that a lot of people flew in and out of Tijuana, and that my understanding is that is very convenient, and it works out well for most people. When you travel a lot and you are on one airline, because that's one of the things that makes the inconvenience of travel a little more tolerable is being on the same airline all the time, getting some of those perks. That takes you from Mexico City to Dallas to San Diego.
Gotcha. Is that a certain airline that has a hub in Dallas?
It is a certain airline that has a hub in Dallas.
That's fantastic. I know you and Bryce Miller were there, as was Meg McLaughlin. I would urge anybody who has not seen Meg's photos from the weekend. Yeah. They were just fantastic. Yeah, I think you and Bryce both said different ways. It's hard to take the statistics from the weekend and say this could be a jumping off point. But to me, it seemed like there were a lot of things, whether that was the Lucha Libre wrestling masks, whether that was the sombrero, whether that was the fun that the players seemed to be having. Is that the positive you take from the weekend, more so even than two wins?
This is what I always say about professional athletes, baseball players in particular. It's a very mental game. If they believe it. All right? Like, we can, and I often do, we can be cynical about momentum. We can be cynical mm-hmm. about confidence, right? Especially when it's achieved at 7,349 feet, with fly balls being home runs, line drive doubles or outs becoming home runs that are 440 mm-hmm. feet. You know that one-eighth of the home runs hit 434 feet or longer this season were hit this weekend in Mexico. That wow. is not a coincidence. it was like old time Coors baseball before the humidor, which I do think, by the way, I did not have this confirmed. I believe Susan Slusser of the San Francisco Chronicle did confirm it, that there was a humidor adjustment for game two. I will guarantee mm-hmm. you the pitchers that pitched better on Sunday. Okay.
Yes.
And and the weather had a little something to do, and the wind had a little something to do. Not to mention that you very rarely have back-to-back games, and Vegas should have known this when it set the over-under at 20 and a half runs. You just don't have back-to-back games like that. It just, you know, right. it just doesn't happen. It really wasn't that big a surprise. Now, I think it was the biggest surprise that there was only 6-4. But anyway, I digress, as I sometimes do. What were we talking about, Ryan?
We were talking about Mexico City and the confidence.
It's all mental. Speaking right. of, if these guys believe it, and that's why mm-hmm. I think that tonight is big. It's not the end of the season or whatever. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is, come home tonight and score 7 runs. Have fun at sea level. I noticed some May gray. Are we in May?
We're in May.
I noticed some May gray, whatever, that is here. And come here tonight, score, wear the sombrero or whatever, beat up on the Reds, and you've got a couple, you got Luke Weaver going tonight, mm-hmm. not exactly, you know, at his peak. And I think that is huge for them. I do. I think that it's big to come home and have a couple guys really go off.
Right. And oh, by the way, welcome back Fernando Tatis. He will make his San Diego debut after joining the club, gosh, what seems like a year and a half ago in Phoenix. Kevin, this guy brings so much energy, brings so much, I mean, for lack of a better word, fun. Sort of to the clubhouse and to the field. What do you anticipate his reception being tonight? And how has he helped this team already?
It's going to go off tonight. It'll be great. Yeah. I don't know if it will be like when Juan Soto was signed, to me was one of the biggest nights in Padres history, because right. fans were in their seats 45 minutes early. I mean, 3/4 of the fans that were there because of what it represented to them about this organization. I don't know if people are going to be in their seats waiting for Fernando Tatis Jr. to run out on the field, you know, an hour before the game and do sprints. But the reception that he gets, I believe, will be it's going to be electric. I'm glad that I will get to be there. It's one of those you go, yeah, this was kind of cool to see. People love this kid, love yeah. him. And, you know, there will be a careers where there'll be many years to discuss his legacy and whether it was or wasn't, or how much it was affected by what he did or did not do. I am telling you, people love this kid.
Yeah, there's something about him. And I don't even know if it's conscious or purposeful on his part, but people seem drawn to him, kids in particular.
It's both. Yeah. It's who yeah. he is. Okay, you don't fake this swagger. You don't fake this charisma, but you're also not an idiot, and you also play it up. I mean, I see Fernando yeah. in up moments, and I see Fernando in down moments. He's very aware of what his responsibility is. He's also 24 years old, and it's a heavy burden to carry. And I think that people should understand that and understand he's not perfect. But he does a remarkable job. He does far better than 99.9% of anyone who would do. And those who've had that thrust on them don't always handle it as well as him.
Sure. Kevin, last time I saw you in person, we were both at Chase Field for Fernando Tatis's first game back. One of the things that I noticed at the very end of that game was the interplay that he has with the fans in right field. Is the Padres were putting the Diamondbacks away in the ninth inning, and he's kind of turning around and leading the cheers with his glove and sort of hyping them up. Is this what we should expect from him at Petco, especially? Is somebody who, I mean, to me, there's more back and forth with that crowd than any Padre right fielder I can remember since number 19.
Oh, Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, that's who he is. One thing I noticed through spring training, and then I really noticed up close because I went out to the bleachers at Wrigley Field, which is one of the few places that you're right on top of him. He is so engaged, both in the game, and then because it's not shortstop, because it is the outfield, you get a few extra seconds. He's so engaged with the crowd, and to be at home, I think will be it'd be something that would be entertaining. I think it makes those seats some of the best in the house. I really do. You would ask me what he has done for this team. It's a lot. It's a lot. I don't know what it's worth. There should be a category of war. He should get an extra win win above replacement. I don't want to overstate it, but there is an energy. Look, the sombrero. I don't know if it was given to him, but it was then his idea to use it. They were debating what to do. It's just you see how excited he is on for everything. Not only that, then he performs, right? What is he? He's got an 8-game hitting streak. He went 0-for-5 his first. He's gotten over 300 in his last 8 games. He backs it up every time. Now look, he's not playing his best. He's chasing a little bit. He's not putting the ball in air as much as he would like to, but every time he makes contact with the bat, you go, this guy could reach base. There's just a lot that he brings.
Sure. I know that the Padres are hitting better, that we've seen, some home runs from guys who don't normally hit home runs. Austin Nola yesterday being one of them. There still seem to be some real issues with this offense and with the run scoring ability. Any sign of that abating? And what do you make of sort of their inability to score the last, month?
I know this is odd to say coming off of a 4-strikeout day, but Manny Machado over the last four games, much better, much better. The results were there, one game in Chicago, and then of course the first game in Mexico City.
Sure.
But not chasing. It was preposterous how much he was chasing, how much he was swinging and missing. But he's hitting the ball hard and hitting the ball in the air. When he's not striking out, he cut down on the strikeouts before yesterday. Juan Soto, don't even know what to tell you because it depends on the day. What I thought was interesting, to put where Juan Soto's at now, which is the equivalent of a half a season with the Padres, basically. That was a good series that he had in San Francisco. I know it was on the road. I know it was home, but it was neither San Diego or San Francisco. It was in Mexico City. But that was a good 2 games he had. But the old Juan Soto, the 2020, 2021 Juan Soto, you'd be that was just a series, a home run, three hits, 5 walks, whatever. He scored a lot of runs, made some stuff happen. Cool, whatever. That was a really good series for Juan Soto with the Padres because he just hasn't been that guy. There are at-bats where you say, oh, he's fixed it. Then there's some at-bats where you say, holy smokes. Those swings, he was wasn't even in the batter's box. He's begging for walks. I don't know. And I don't feel bad saying I don't know, because if the people that are being paid to know knew, and if Juan Soto knew, he'd probably be better. So this is, to me, one of the – it's a saga, and it is a story that one way or the other, I still think it's going to turn out with Juan Soto getting his payday and being – but if he's not, what an amazing story and what an amazing fall.
Yeah.
And you know what else? I think his on base average is still 380s. This is not a bad player. It's just there's this thing called expectations. I try to keep them out of my life because then stuff like this happens where suddenly you are like, man, that guy with the 380 batting or on base percentage sucks.
Right. Right. This isn't Ryan Ludwig, right? This isn't a guy who's forgotten how to get on base altogether. This is a guy who, still reaches base, but it's, I'm an amateur, Kevin.
Corey Kluber for him. You didn't give up James Wood. Absolutely. I mean, that's why we always have that as our standard of what we compare, the Ryan Ludwig trade. But you gave away the future. Here's how you look at that trade. If Juan Soto helps you win a World Series, you don't care that if James Wood becomes a Hall of Famer. You don't care if Mackenzie Gore becomes a Hall of Famer. All three become Hall of Famers, you might go, but you don't care if these guys, CJ Abrams, James Wood, Mackenzie Gore, all stars for the Nationals, because the Padres got their World Series and Juan Soto was a big part of it. But if Juan Soto is out of here after this year, or goes, plays all three or 2.5 years, the three pennant races they got him for, and he's not any, you know, not really good, and the Padres don't win a World Series, then we're going to be fixated on what those three young guys do for the Nationals.
No, that's a heck of a point, Kevin. You're absolutely right. To me, yeah, and just some of that confidence to me seems to be gone. I mean, we watched a lot of him in spring training, a lot of him in the World Baseball Classic. You know, every time he hit during the World Baseball Classic, I stopped what I was doing because I thought he might go deep. Here, yeah, just I think the body language is different. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I see.
Yeah, you know what? I can't debate you on that because, like, this is one of those things, right? Like, it's are we bringing our own kind of interpretation of it into it? Right. I think you're right. I happen to agree with you. I don't know that's a fact. What I will say is I can see where the act has maybe gotten tired. I mean, it takes a pretty special player to at 19 have be up and doing the Soto shuffle, right? Yeah. And like doing it in the World freaking Series, right? And mm-hmm. and against big time pitchers. But you know why everybody was cool with everything that Juan Soto brings to the table? Because he was freaking backing it up. And now it just looks like, you know, like it's like I saw, man, I hate talking about social media, but I saw a tweet from someone about and it was interesting, in Arizona, the Juan Soto did that thing where he runs out of the box, right? Because he was saying he got ball four. And then the Diamondbacks organist played a song that had back in it, like, or like that, you know, baby come back or whatever in it. And someone was complimenting the organist for like being a quick thinker, right? And having that to mind. And I was like, yes, that is pretty impressive. Except Juan Soto does that like three times a game. So like it's become the move of Juan Soto is like begging for ball four. And that makes the shuffle a little bit tired, right? Like I think the shuffle's awesome. I think bat flips are awesome. I think walking around like you got a bigger dude, I think Juan Soto's act is awesome, except when he's batting, you know, 187, which by the way is up to 202. So
sure. Counterpoint, Padres are above 500 despite Manny Machado not hitting, Juan Soto not hitting, no production whatsoever offensively at catcher. I think, well, weathering the late starts to the season by both Darvish and Musgrove, there's a lot to like here if you assume that the guys who haven't been hitting and producing will eventually start hitting and producing.
Absolutely. And that's where, like, it's hard for me to keep that perspective, right? Like, if I know it's hard for fans but like, I'm watching like every pitch, man. And like, I mean, I'm going, and I'm trying to do the service for the fans of like, well, what's wrong here? So it's hard to keep perspective, but I think you're right. That is something. I was talking to Xander Bogaerts, and you would expect a teammate to say this, a player involved in it to say this, of course. But, you know, Xander Bogaerts, pretty thoughtful guy. And his quote to me was when I said, so that seems to me, we talked about some other things I won't share here, but like, because I was trying to get perspective from him. So I was like, so it seems to me the way you see it is that you guys are in a pretty good place considering that these guys haven't produced yet. And he said, that's the only way to look at it. Like, I don't see how you would look at it any other way. Like, it was just the way he said it and the confidence with which he said it. I mean, he was as perplexed as anyone else. Like, he saw, when did you ever think you would see this? Manny Machado and Juan Soto hitting like this. They're going to hit. So I'm inclined to agree with him. Baseball is a game where the numbers even out, right? And even if Juan Soto is only as good as he was last year, and Manny Machado is 2017 Manny, which is sort of like, you know, take out 13, 14, and kind of early Manny and go, you know, the last 7-8 years of his career. 17 was the low point, all right? Mm-hmm. And even if he's that guy, which is, I don't know what it was, 32 home runs, maybe it was 28, and maybe it was a 790 OPS or something like that. Even if they're only those two guys, with Xander Bogaerts, with Fernando Tatis Jr., with the bottom of the lineup, the Padres are going to the playoffs and they might go really far.
Right.
So,
well, that's the thing, right?
That's not what you're paying for. That's not what you're paying for. That's a disappointment. Right. That's two different arguments. I'm just telling you, like, if the topic is how will the Padres do, they'll do okay if those guys are, you know, that way.
Well, Well, and that's the thing with expectations, right? This is a club that expects to play into October. We expect them to play into October. As a result, nobody's getting too worked up yet about results in April. And it could be worse. You could be the Cardinals, right?
Ooh, it's kind of weird, huh? Like, the real marker that people use inside the game is Memorial Day, right? And who knows, the way this game has changed and the way, heck, I think at least one World Series team, except 2020, but one World Series team every year since 2018, maybe, was struggling in June, right? Mm-hmm. The Braves, the Nationals, even the Dodgers 1 year. That's why I think it was 18. Last year, the Phillies. Mm-hmm. So it's weird what's happening recent years. And then this year we got the Orioles. You know, the Rays are always a good team, but what they've done this year, who's the other team that is doing really well that we all should be somewhat surprised by and don't really.
Diamondbacks. Yeah.
But there's even a couple others that are holding their own or actually doing pretty well right now. And it's like, and then look at what's happening with the Dodgers, who just swept the Cardinals. So they're at 16-13, I believe, just like the Diamondbacks. Padres at 15-14 now, a game back. That's the other thing is, I think they were a game and a half back at this point last year. Better record by like 8 or 9 wins, but the Dodgers were also on 111 win pace. So like, sure. Just, you know, whatever. I think they're in, I don't want to say a good spot, but they're in a good spot because they're not playing above their, you know, they're playing below. Right. And that's not something to be happy about, but it's also something to go, well, you guys are playing like crap and you're 15-14.
Right.
It's not so bad. You're playing like crap, hitting like crap. They have the fewest errors. They're up near the top in like defensive metrics are like outs above average. They're playing very well. They're pitching fairly well. They're not getting the starting pitching they were. I know that we notice when the bullpen stinks and, you know, throw out what Steven Wilson gave up the other day. He did have a rough outing. Steven Wilson, Tim Hill, those guys have been used more. The bullpen as a whole has pitched less than last year, only slightly more than last year, but certain guys have pitched a heck of a lot more. Remember, there's no Suarez. I think this is really good that Nick Martinez is in the bullpen. I think that they are, I still think they're a very good team that just needs to hit better. That said, if they don't hit better, they'll probably go to the playoffs and, you know, squeak in and probably not do much.
Right.
Who knows?
Right. The Cincinnati Reds, are the kind of team that a poor hitting club can get right against. This is, you know, the Reds are, to me, a little bit of a mystery as an organization. I think that this year's team has some nice pieces on it, including old friend Will Myers, though he's on the injured list. But, you know, what do you see out of them? And take me through some of the pitching matchups here.
Well, I think that you only get, Graham Ashcraft in the middle game. And other than that, you have a couple pitchers that are struggling. You don't get their young guns. And honestly, I haven't kept up with how those guys.
You don't get Hunter Green. Yeah.
Right. I don't even know how, like, they have three really good young pitchers and I don't know how they're doing. I do know that they're talented enough that they could come in and they could shove it and you could not hit. And that would be, you know, unfortunate for the Padres, but hey, now they've got no excuse but to take 2 of 3 or maybe even a sweep if they're so confident and the sombrero has its magic. That's to me, the story here is that this is not a dangerous team. It's a team that has some dangerous pitchers and that you are avoiding that this series. It's time to beat up on Luke Weaver. Is it Luis Sessa? It's time to beat up on those guys on Monday and Wednesday. And, you know, I'm not saying Graham Ashcraft can't be beat because he can. I believe it's a 2.10 ERA and 5 starts. That's a good pitcher. Did you come down from the moon with your confidence? And remember that, oh, yeah, we can hit. And that's it. Look, they're not hitting well at Petco Park. It's a small sample size, but, like, Juan Soto hasn't hit well at Petco Park. I do think that now that you get the Reds, after facing the Dodgers and then going to Minnesota, and that's a tough trip, Minnesota and the Dodgers, you come home and what is it, the Royals and the Red Sox. It's time to start heating up.
Right. And this is a team that's played a really tough schedule, I think. Through the first month of the season. you know, it seems like a playoff contender every week. You get a little catch, or you catch a little break with the Reds here. And then, you know, all you got to do is play the Dodgers three times. So
they've done a really good job. Look, they weren't great in Chicago. They didn't take advantage of a struggling pitcher. That kid's good, but he was struggling, and they let him Wesneski. He pitched well, and they didn't hit well on the final game there. They could have taken 2 out of 3, gone 7-2 on the trip. But here's the fact: they took 3 out of 4 in Atlanta. They took 3 out of 4 in Arizona. Arizona hasn't folded after that. They have a better record after that. They're 16-13. Yeah. They're hanging in there. They have, if they're pitching, which no one really believes it will, or that they have, you know, or that they'll go out and get enough pitching. But they have a good team. So the Padres are playing better too. And I think there is a lot to be happy about. Again, that's part of why I think this series is so big. Yes, got the Dodgers on the horizon. Big weekend. Division games are bigger now. You play the Dodgers 13 times instead of 19. You play the Giants 13, right. All that. But I think that this here, now it's tough. Look, that altitude gets you. That was a long trip, and you had to come back, and you got back late. But you're playing the Reds. Yeah. I think it's a big series for where are they at. Now, they lose 2 out of 3. Whatever. I think it can be a big series for them.
Yep. I ask you this question every week, Kevin, and we'll close on this. Big start for Blake Snell. I mean, he pitches. It seems like every week we talk about, you know, just when you get it sort of the end of your wits with him, he goes out and shoves. Is this a big outing for him?
Sure. It is my understanding that, a lot of this is Blake and Blake not trusting his stuff, which I don't know how to get past that block because it's like throw the freaking ball in the zone and people can't hit it for the most part. My understanding, there also is a mechanical thing that because his slider is not good this year, and that's his pitch. Right. All right.
Right.
As much as we all thought it was cute that the changeup was in timeout, that was never a great pitch. But the slider is not working. And my understanding, there was a mechanical thing that had to do with, if you're watching, his head and where it was at when he throws the slider. Supposedly that's fixed. Now, he had to throw a bullpen at 7,349 feet. I love saying it because I'll never forget it now. I don't know what you get out of that on your Saturday bullpen in Mexico mm-hmm. City. But my understanding is they've identified that and have worked on it, and we'll see tonight. So it's always that way with Blake Snell, right? We'll see tonight. Yeah.
Kevin, how affected were you by the elevation? Did you try to run while you were there?
You know, yes. And now here's the thing I can't figure out, because I wasn't. But I also know that I didn't push myself. So, I was like, wow, this is weird. I worked out both days, for the first 2 days, and did a little running. But there's the key. I did a little running. Gotcha. Yeah. Plus, you know, I mean, I am in superb shape, so.
I think it's living in the part of town where you live, Kev. There's a little elevation there that helps you.
That was facetious for those not watching. I think if you're watching, you can see my face that I was joking. But anyway, I just don't, you know, whatever. Yeah, no, it was good. I will be interested to see how these guys respond. You know, everybody, both can be true. You know, they're there, they're asked how, and they're giving all the diplomatic answers. This also was a major undertaking, and they went way out of their way to play it. They come back from Coors Field wiped out a lot of times. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This will be interesting.
Awesome. Kevin, never before have I been so excited for a Monday night game against them. There's so much going on. There's so much.
Imagine if Will Myers was active. That would be really something.
I know. It's crazy. Well, we'll wrap it here, Kevin. I will talk to you again. It will be Thursday, I believe. We will be previewing the first Padre-Dodgers series of the season. No yawning. No yawning allowed.
It'll be Friday. Because Thursday, no one will talk to me except my granddaughter.
Awesome.
Because that's an off day.
That is an off day after a very, 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 very long road trip. So. Awesome. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Aiken, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.